Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. We call this the Mariah Carey Moment Show. And who among us has not had a Mariah Carey moment? That's right, the monitors are down. You can't hear the song that you're supposed to sing anyway. And you should know the words to the song, but maybe you don't. And you decide you'll just walk around and gripe to the rest of the cast members on the stage. Has that not happened to you, Rick?
I get paid to deal with that every day. That's what I do.
Shelley, I know with an electronic medical record, there have been moments when your job has been impacted.
Absolutely.
Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. And now let me tell you my assembled panel of experts. First of all, from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistant Program, Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And unfortunately, from the University of Kentucky Manager Communications Infrastructure, to tell you about our web presence, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. That's right, Moorhead State Public Radio's website. It is a marvelous website. And I'm not just saying that because, you know, the station manager's sitting here with me. It's absolutely wonderful. Jump in there, find Health Matters, look at some of those other wonderful shows, but gravitate towards Health Matters and listen to the shows. There you'll find a list of all the recent shows. There's a summary, there's a link to listen to the audio, there's a link to a podcast. If you know what a podcast is, then you know what to do. Again, WMKY.org. After that, after you've heard enough and you're done listening to Health Matters and you decide, I really need to say something about this, Facebook.com/HM Radio Show. That's right. That is the fan page. And, you know, that was something that Tony wanted us to call it, a fan page. I was trying to be more humble in the whole process, but Tony came up with fan page.
A concern. Bystander page.
Yeah, I mean, it should be an innocent bystander page, but nonetheless, Facebook.com/HM Radio Show. That's where you can leave feedback, leave comments, listen, look at our posts. You'll see things there that have shown up on the show. You'll see things that are just timely in the news. Usually it's medical. Sometimes it's funny. Sometimes there's no explanation for what's up there, but certainly that's no reason not to visit, not to interact. And believe it or not, that is a site that is maintained by Tony and myself. We certainly go out there. We certainly occasionally banter around and talk about certain things. It is your way to interact with the show. Again, Facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, Thyroid Awareness. That's right.
January, are you aware of yours?
Well, no. In fact, I'm not.
So how does one be thyroid aware?
Well,
is that, you know, when my kids were little, my wife used to yell, "Don't do that. You're going to rupture your spleen." Is she being spleen aware?
You know, she's being spleen. I don't know what that means.
But you're saying be
January
thyroid aware.
January is, and the problem, the reason January is thyroid awareness month is because people are not aware of their thyroid.
I didn't even know I had one.
Good.
Where's it at?
Let's do our top 10 fun facts about thyroid disease or thyroid.
How many are we
going to
do this time?
Five. Okay. How about that? Five fun facts. All right. As part of Thyroid Awareness Month in January, information on the thyroid, the prevalence and impact of thyroid disease based on data from the American Thyroid Association. That's right. The ATA. Fun fact number one, the thyroid gland can be described as a butterfly-shaped gland normally located in the lower front of the neck. If you think about a butterfly draped over your windpipe with its wings on either side, that's where the thyroid gland is.
Is that why people get butterfly tattoos there?
No. Who gets a butterfly tattoo on their neck?
I don't know. I just thought I'd see if you knew anything about that.
Butterfly tattoos?
Yeah. Because I think you probably got one on your ankle.
I do. I have no tattoos. No tattoos. Thought of a couple of clever things to say.
Decided against it, huh?
Decided against it. Not going to go anywhere.
It's a new
with
year.
One.
It's a new you.
A butterfly-shaped hormone, butterfly-shaped gland. That's right. We're going to keep going. Now, see what you've done. You've completely derailed the show, as is your wont. After 2 weeks, you would think, being gone, you would think now that you would integrate yourself into the show.
Well, the funny thing is that's something that you can't edit out because you never stop.
I know. I didn't stop. Well, there's no point in stopping. It's just going to get worse. The thyroid gland, a butterfly-shaped gland in the lower front part of the neck, again, draped across your windpipe, wings go out to either side of your neck. It makes Thyroid hormone. No surprise there. Thyroid hormones are secreted into the blood, carried to every tissue in the body, and this is basically your body's thermostat. It helps determine the way your body uses energy, keeps you warm, keeps your brain, heart, muscles, other organs working properly, sets your pulse, sets your blood pressure, determines how much fluid your body retains, and so forth. It regulates your metabolism. Fun fact number two, more than 12% of the U.S. population will develop a thyroid condition during their lifetime. Now, 12%, Rick, we would say 12% is about 1 in, let's do the math here.
8.
1 in 8, right? That's 12%. 60% of those with thyroid disease are not aware of their condition.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Nine. I mean, that's the thing. You're not aware.
Eight
so this is Thyroid Awareness Month because you're 60% are not aware. Now, let's go back. We got 12%. 1 in 8 in the U.S. population will develop thyroid condition in their lifetime. Now, here is fun fact number 4, which confuses the life out of me. Okay. Fun fact number 4. From the American Thyroid Association, women are 5 to 8 times more likely than men to have thyroid problems. 1 woman in 8 will develop a thyroid disorder during her lifetime. Okay, some of the mathematicians in the audience are having problems with the American Thyroid Association. Overall, 12% of the U.S. population will develop a thyroid condition, men and women and other genders and sexualities and so forth.
Do you think they separated out smart men and dumb men?
So, all right, let's assume they did, Rick. Then
I'm just going to say that's going to score. Well, because the smart men are going to be closer to women, right?
You mean the women are close to the smart men, or do you mean the smart men are more like women?
I think they just got rid of the men in general.
I mean, it looks to me like the U.S. population does not include men.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Okay. That's the only way the math works.
And the math has to work. So at this point, women are 5 to 8 times more likely to be U.S. citizens than men, and 1 woman in 8 will develop a thyroid disorder during her lifetime. Fun fact number 5, hypothyroidism, that is the condition where the thyroid gland does not make enough thyroid hormone, and in that case, you get extreme fatigue, depression, forgetfulness, and some weight gain. Again, everything slows down. Clinically, we look for thickening of the hair. Often the voice drops. People have more trouble with sleep disorder, breathing, there are some skin changes as well, and changes of the reflexes when we examine a person in clinic. Very common, hypothyroidism, a very common condition. And the nice thing about it is it's very treatable. When I teach students, I tell them, people will thank you for finding hypothyroidism because you can treat it easily and you can make them feel a lot better, higher energy levels, stabilizing their weight and so forth. So this is the one that we love. And we'll talk more about other thyroid conditions in our second fractional portion. That is our sponsor, January. According to the American Thyroid Association, is Thyroid Awareness Month. It's time to be aware of your thyroid. Be very aware. It has been... Oh, before we start, this is a new wrinkle. We've never done this before on Health Matters, and I thought, let's do something goofy for 2017.
Isn't just starting the show enough?
There's that. There's the elections. There's lots of goofiness going around, and we're going to contribute to that as well. So what I found, there was a group called Inc., I-N-C, which was a business group, and they published their most overused words and phrases for 2016. And it happens there are 21 overused words and phrases. Now, here's what I've done. I've separated them up into 3 groups of 7. I'm handing out groups of 7. My colleagues on the radio show have no idea this was coming. Here's your job. You need to put your 7 words into the conversation as many times as you can. That is, we're going to try to use more overused words
for the rest of the show.
For the rest of the show, as we possibly can. I want to empower you to use these overused words. I mean, from a functionality standpoint, you will be empowered from the rest of the show.
So are these in order of most to worst or most to least?
I don't know that.
So, because if that's the case, I got the last 7, so mine are going to be harder than your all's.
But at the end of the day, we need to use them all, right?
At the end of the day, we do. I mean, that's the methodology that we've chosen. And Rick, you can take those.
But for me to get there, I'm going to be pushing the envelope.
True. I would start with the low-hanging fruit. And then work your way up to the more.
And that's why you're
ones.
Our thought leader.
And that's my methodology. Yeah.
Do we have enough bandwidth for all that?
That was world class, Tony. That was some world class radio.
Now, here's the problem. We don't have to do this all at once.
Oh, but you know we will. I was thinking, how can I get a paragraph together with all of these in one paragraph?
Well, I thought it would add some color to the show.
But that's how I would get, if I did that, that's how I would get the one in here that's hard to say, and that's spitball. If I did that, I would get a spitball.
Okay, that's cheating, but okay, fine. But let's talk about some serious health issues. I think that would be the low-hanging fruit for the show, is to go ahead and do that. And so the ideation I had when I started this was, we will continue the show and actually talk about health issues while also empowering the rest of the group to use these low-hanging fruit words.
How many times are you going to say low-hanging fruit?
It's just a nice one. It is. But let's start off with saying it was cold. It was cold the past week.
Really? Didn't notice.
Because, Rick, do you want to tell us where you've been?
Oh, I've got 3 minutes. I can probably tell everybody anybody who's listened to the show for the last 5 years knows that the first week in January, I always go to nice, warm, it wasn't really warm, Las Vegas. And I like to go to the Consumer Electronics Show. I like to be part of the 170,000 people that converge on that city to talk tech. And it was pretty cool.
Now, ostensibly, you did this in order to gauge the threat of these new electronic devices to the UK system?
Or? Absolutely. I mean, you know, from a UK standpoint, we need to know what's coming onto our campuses, you know, what is going to be from a security standpoint, from a bandwidth utilization, right now every student carries traditionally 4 or 5 devices of some sort that have some type of network resource requirement. So is that going to go up? Is that going to go down? I mean, you know, what we expect to see in the dorms? You know, what's going to be the new latest and greatest thing? Are we going to be using augmented reality as part of our workplace? Are we going to be using curved screens? I mean, there's all kinds of things that help to get in front of by going to CES. So the problem is CES is massive. Las Vegas is known for its conventions, right? So they got a convention center that hosts the largest conventions in the world. But not only do they have that one convention center, the Sands Expo Center was the old convention center, and it's still in use. Every one of the big major hotels has their own convention center. So CES took space of all of the Las Vegas Convention Center, 8 halls in total, 8 halls with multiple floors. The Sands was 3 floors, completely full, top to bottom, of exhibit hall floors. And they did another full conference center in the Aria Hotel. I mean, there was just hundreds of thousands of square foot, if maybe millions of square foot, to actually walk and try to see. I think something like 40,000 booths.
What's your strategy when you go there?
Sneakers. The first year I wore loafers, I learned the lesson. And so now you see people dressing up. You see, of course, it's full of buyers and sellers, right? I mean, the whole concept is sellers bring their product and they try to find people who want to buy and sell. And it's kind of a marketplace for that. But I found out the first year, the only feasible thing you can do is wear a backpack, wears comfortable clothes, and walk a lot. And every couple hours, stop and drink. You know, stop and drink, hydrate yourself, because out there in the high altitude and everything. So we can get into what I saw later, but I mean, the whole event itself is just this massive technological convergence, right? And it's pretty amazing. 170,000 people.
Wow.
That's almost as many listeners as we have.
Rounding up.
Yeah. Rounding up, of course. You know.
Of course.
You know. I can't work any of these in.
Yeah, you could spitball it. But at any rate, see, I'm using your words now. I want to empower our listeners to go and get yourself some low-hanging fruit.
Push the envelope.
Because it's time to take a break. We'll be back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Mariah Carey Moment Show. Fascinating that we lined this up with Rick's Consumer Electronics Show, reminding you that even the best of electronics, including monitors and the ability to hear yourself and lip sync to yourself, sometimes leaves us as we're doing performances.
Well, you know what's interesting is we never had these kinds of problems when we were young, because the singers sang. They didn't actually need a, let me use the, I'm using air quotes here, backing track, right? We call it, anyway, everybody sees it as lip syncing, but I mean, in the industry, they call it a backing track, right? So if something happens and the technology fails, you continue to hear the song and you're not disgruntled as a consumer. of the show because it's more about the entertainment value. But when we were younger, it was more about the quality and the actual, hey, you know, this person can actually sing if you give them a microphone. It's pretty amazing. So
right.
Anyway.
Ability to entertain, I think. Our sponsor for the second time, Thyroid Awareness Month. That's right. January is Thyroid Awareness Month, according to the American Thyroid Association. We are trying to make you aware of your thyroid. Be aware of your thyroid. Be very
all
aware.
I know is it's hard for you to say, and it's some butterfly somewhere.
Yeah. All right. The thyroid gland, described as a butterfly. Why do you do this to me? It's a butterfly-shaped gland. It sits in the front part of the neck with the wings going off to the side. It makes thyroid hormones. They're secreted in the bloodstream, affect every organ in the body. They set your metabolism. Think of it as your body's thermostat. It helps your body burn energy to stay warm, keep the brain, heart muscles, and other organs working properly. Fun fact number two, more than 12% of the U.S. population will develop a thyroid condition during their lifetime. Fun fact number three, 60% of those with thyroid disease are unaware of their condition. What happens is people come in with vague complaints, or on a routine screening, we test the levels of thyroid hormone, and we find they have a problem. Fun fact number four, which is mathematically inexplicable, women are 5 to 8 times more likely than men to have thyroid problems. 1 woman in 8 will develop a thyroid disorder during her lifetime. Fun fact number five, hypothyroidism is a condition where the thyroid does not make enough hormone. Symptoms include fatigue, depression, forgetfulness, and some weight gain. And although there are some physical exam findings, we check the thyroid hormone. If we're thinking about it, we check it. If we check it, we find it's low, we supplement. Fun fact number six, pregnant women with undiagnosed or inadequately treated hypothyroidism have an increased risk of miscarriage, preterm delivery, and severe developmental problems. You do not want to be hypothyroid during your pregnancy. Fun fact number seven, hyperthyroidism is a condition causing the gland to produce too much thyroid hormone. That causes irritability, nervousness, muscle weakness, unexplained weight loss, sleep disturbance, vision problems, and an eye irritation, particularly with something called Graves' disease. We'll talk about that. Fun fact number eight, it builds up a protein that forces the eyeballs out. You may have seen those people that have protruding eyeballs, and often that's due to Graves' disease. And that's fun fact number eight, Graves' disease, a type of hyperthyroidism. Affects about 1% of the population. And let me say, Shelley, and I know you agree with me on this, hyperthyroidism is difficult to treat, and the patients almost never thank you.
Yes, that's correct.
The medications are tough. You have to stop the medications in order to do diagnostic tests, so you make them a little better, and then you make them sick again. You have to stop the medicines again to do any type of permanent treatment. The permanent treatments sometimes work, sometimes don't. It's an absolute mess. I cringe when I diagnose hyperthyroidism because it is so difficult, and no one is going to thank me for treating that. Fun fact number nine, most thyroid cancers respond to treatment. A small percentage of them can be very aggressive. And fun fact number 10, most thyroid diseases are lifelong. Hyperthyroid, hypothyroid, a lifelong condition that can be managed with medical attention. So that is our fun facts from the American Thyroid Association. Remember, be aware of your thyroid. Be very aware. Now, before we got sidetracked, before Rick interrupted the functionality of the program with his ridiculous ideations.
Well, before the show entered a period of negative growth.
Shelley?
Around that time.
Okay. Boy, you got some soft ones, didn't you? At any rate, I was talking about how cold it was. The first week of January, it was extremely cold here. We were, for Kentucky.
My daughter in Utah told me it was 10 below. So,
yeah, we were not.
It wasn't really that
from
cold
northern
here.
States. But this gives me an opportunity. There were a couple of things that I wanted to mention about cold weather. One is something that we do not get any money from these people. We don't get any money from anybody, as a matter of fact. But I wanted to mention again a product called Yak Track. I wear them myself.
You just like them.
I do. I honestly do. And the article, this first came to our attention back in 2005. The Journal of the American Geriatric Society published a study of Yak Track. Yak Tracks are some things that you slip on over your shoes, and they are essentially sort of like chains for your shoes and give you better
Aren't
traction.
Aren't they more like tennis rackets?
If you want them to be tennis rackets, they'll be tennis rackets. They're sort of chain-shaped tennis.
And in your case, they really only need to be racquetball rackets because you're not a big man.
You're going to go there. We're in the middle of the show here. I'm trying to inform people about winter weather, and you're
going
to go there.
I'm going outside the box, man.
Okay, I'll give you that
one. You should
one.
Never have given me this list because I will utilize it.
I'm sure you will utilize that.
Do you even know? Do you know all the words that I have?
No, I don't know the words you have. Yeah. I, but I'm guessing a couple right now. I'll tell
Let's put it this way: I have utilized a lot of them.
Back to Yak Tracks. They were the article was in 2005, and they simply gave 109 subjects. They gave them the Yak Tracks and told them to wear them when they go outside, whether it was snowing or not. Wear them when they went outside. And if you look at the fall rates, those who were wearing Yak Tracks, their fall rates dropped by nearly 60% when they were walking on snow and ice. As a matter of fact, the injurious falls, the ones that actually caused injury necessitating medical attention, dropped by 87% wearing these Yak Tracks. 12 of the 19 outdoor falls occurred when they were not wearing their assigned device. No serious injury or fracture occurred in either group, but the number needed to treat to prevent one non-serious injury fall in one winter was 6. If 6 people buy Yak Tracks, one of them is going to avoid a fall.
So at the end of the day, there was a lot of buy-in for this product.
Sure. We're not even going to comment on that. The point is,
she's a real thought leader, isn't she?
She is a thought leader, absolutely. Rick, thank you for that. You know, I'm not even going to use my words. You guys are just doing such a great
job.
That's
world class, Tony. That is world class.
Thank you. That's my methodology. That's what I'm going to do it. But these Yak Tracks, I mean, honestly, since I bought them, I have become absolutely sold on these things. I remember when I have a hill on my driveway. I used to salt it. It used to be I would just basically skate down the hill flinging salt as I went down, and now I can stop and refill the salt to halfway down and so forth and have no problems. I really do heartily endorse these products. I think it's a great idea. Whatever product you use, I think it is important to pay special attention to traction during winter, especially these cold days when the ground may be frozen and there may be snow or ice on the ground. Next up, from the January 9th issue of the Journal of the American Heart Association, a study out of Melbourne, a research fellow at Melbourne University of Melbourne in Australia. Now, we know that heart disease deaths spike over the Christmas holidays. In the United States, December 25th to January 7th, the coldest period of the year. So is it, in fact, the holidays? Is it cold? Why is it that we have a spike in heart disease deaths?
But Tony, it's not always cold in December.
No.
But it always is the holiday.
It always is the holidays. During a 25-year period from 1988 to 2013, there were a total of 750,000 deaths and 200,000 noted as cardiac deaths. And what they did, I think, was pretty interesting. They looked at New Zealand, where Christmas occurs basically in the summertime.
Right.
Right. So the
cold
is gone. And they still found a 4.2% increase in heart-related deaths occurring away from the hospital during those holiday periods. The average age of death, which is an interesting thing to measure, 76.2 years during Christmas period, 77.1 years the other times of the year. So the cardiac deaths were occurring slightly younger during the Christmas holidays, and there was an increase in deaths. Now, here's the thing. This caught my attention. This is I look at the fine print on these things. There are a range. This I'm reading directly from the article in the Journal of American Heart Association as interpreted by Medscape. There are a range of theories that may explain the spike in deaths during holiday season, including emotional stress associated with the holidays, changes in diet and alcohol. We can certainly see that. Less staff at medical facilities and changes in the physical environment, for example, visiting relatives. Have you ever... You know, the real reason behind the spike in cardiac deaths in the holidays is family comes to visit. I think I can say, let's get rid of this snow stuff. New Zealand proved it wasn't snow. Maybe it's because the clinic closed, but I honestly think it is the stress of visiting relatives.
You really think so?
What else could it be, Mr. Out of the Box?
Going to give us your ballpark guess?
Well, yeah, but
so you like visiting relatives are a big deal because you've heard over and over again one of the brightest, best lights of Christmas are the taillights of the family.
I was always the guy who said, you know, what's the definition of a pleasure trip, and that's taking your in-laws to the airport. But you know, that's what I heard. But I never agreed with that. So I mean, I like families getting together at the holidays. Now, does it add more stress? Absolutely, but still. I don't know. I don't know. So come on, tell us.
No, ordinarily, as you know, I'm a very easy guy to get along with. I have this naturally lovable demeanor, but even I become testy over the holidays. It's just the way I am. They mentioned there was another possibility. Maybe terminally ill patients hang on and they die during a time that's important to them. And that's kind of cruel if you think about it. My advice is if you're terminally ill, don't hang on for the holidays, because I have seen so many people who get very depressed during the holidays because their relatives died there. Yeah. I do not believe terminally ill patients hang on. We thought that might be the case, but the year 2000 did not show an increase in deaths of terminally ill. That is, they were not able to hang on to the new millennium. So I think that Christmas is, that's probably not it. For whatever reason, I think most likely, Rick, to be honest, it is that what we do, as you know, in the hospital, the nurses will work different shifts so that everybody gets to spend some time right. away from families. So we have different shift work, different environment there. Many of the clinics are closed, the support services, the pharmacies, things like that are closed. And I think that extra stress is really the main reason. I do. The visiting relatives is an interesting thought. The cold weather is clearly not it.
I tell you, you know, Tony, some people may not stress, and I'm sure this isn't the case for everybody, so by no means is this going to be something that's going to be a global, you know, health issue. But I think the whole act of going through, I mean, some people absolutely live for buying presents and doing the shopping and, you know, decorating the house and all that. I find that to be stressful. I find that to be extremely stressful. So, you know, part of me wonders if it's not as much the family coming to the house as it is you preparing for the family to come to the house.
I think Rick's provided some excellent color regarding the issue.
Oh, but so I'm, now you went back to your words.
You were talking so long, I got a chance to look at my list again. I realized I hadn't used that one, so sure, yeah. Why not? Next up, and you mentioned...
There's only so many times I want to say thought leader, right? I just don't want to say that anymore because that is, it's horrible. Thought leader. Think about it. It just sounds bad.
I feel like you're calling my name when you say that.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
No, I got other words for that.
December 17th, this is from the CDC, cold temperatures kill more Americans than hot ones. And this, here's the point. Yes, you are through the holiday season now officially, so your risk of cardiac death is back to winter risk. There are concerns about your ability to maintain your footing in the winter weather. We address that. But in general, cold kills more people than heat, but the numbers are not that impressive. Well, if someone you love died of cold or heat, we're sorry for belittling that. But here's what we got. They've measured cold and hot deaths from 1999 through 2015. And every year except one, cold killed more people than heat did. The average for cold weather deaths runs around 800. The average, a little bit under 800. The average for hot weather deaths runs pretty close to 400. So it's almost double. They mentioned there may be a threshold with heat. That is, as long as you can sweat, as long as the outdoor temperature is less than your body temperature, you have mechanisms for dissipating heat. Maybe you're uncomfortable. Maybe you're not going to get a very good night's sleep tonight, but you can tolerate heat. On the other hand, much of the cold weather deaths are simply due to cool weather. They're not necessarily due to extreme cold. People found frozen to death. Frankly, once the temperature gets down a little bit, you can have a cold weather death anyway. Weather-related deaths, 2 to 7 times as high in low-income countries as in high-income countries. Something we have to think about with our poverty rates here in eastern Kentucky. People are at higher risk. And as always, older people, much higher risk than younger people for both cold and heat-related deaths. So be careful here. We've got, a bit more cold-related possibilities between now and spring. You know, one interesting thing, Rick, if you look at the cold-related deaths by state, Montana, as you might imagine, was the number one state. New Mexico. I mean, New Mexico, of course, has altitude. You know better than I do, having lived in the region. But it was right up there with Colorado, South Dakota. Wyoming and South Dakota in terms of the rates of cold related death.
So, do you think they exempt or exclude skiing accidents? Because there is a lot of northern New Mexico where you can go skiing.
True. Now, if you went skiing and you were, you wound up falling and then died of hypothermia. But if you just skied into a tree, that would not be a cold-related death. I think it has to do with your body temperature got below what you could survive. On heat-related deaths, your former state of Arizona, way up there with Nevada as well. Fascinating. If you look at heat and cold, the one state that stands out is Oklahoma for some reason. Oklahoma has is in the top 7 in both heat-related deaths and also cold-related deaths. And I find that its rate of cold-related deaths, in fact, is similar to that in Maine. So those people in Oklahoma, by all means, get indoors. I want to talk about rudeness, Rick, not because of anything that you have done recently, but just think that it's important to think about rudeness, medical rudeness. This was the January issue of Pediatrics, and they had a simulation. Pediatric medical teams doing a simulation of a seriously ill child, and they introduced rudeness into it to see if rudeness affected the team's performance in these simulations. And they did find rudeness had adverse consequences, both on the diagnosis of the problem and also on the intervention. So this is something to think about. If you are rude to your medical team in the hospital, at least in this pediatric simulation, your care suffered because of your rudeness. Now, some people feel like, well, I'm going to keep them on edge. I'm not going to give them anything. They're going to know. They're going to think twice about my mother rather than me being nice to them and just agreeing with everything. But it turns out in this, and you ask yourself, Rick, how would a person be rude to a medical team? How would you simulate that rudeness? Think out of the box, buddy.
I'm thinking. I want to say no. I better not say that.
Well,
no, I better not say that either.
So they had actors portraying the infant's parents in the simulation, and the parents could have neutral statements like, "Oh no, I'm scared. I'm worried. I'm concerned. Doctor, how is my child?" Or the other one. This is the rude statement. I knew we should have gone to a better hospital where they don't practice third world medicine. I actually heard that statement in practice. But that was the one statement. That was all three. They had three rudeness conditions. One was rudeness by itself. You would say that third world statement. The other one, they had they looked at angry and happy faces, and they gave them interventions to try to make them feel less threatened by the angry face. Then they did the simulation, and then the actors were rude to them and said the third world country thing. Turns out, apparently, if you get to the point where you can tolerate angry faces, that helps you handle the rudeness a little bit. And then the next one, which I really liked, rudeness followed by a narrative intervention. That's where they were rude, and then the people sat down, and they wrote what they thought about the situation, a couple paragraphs.
Because everybody's going to do that.
Well, it's common to do a reflective piece. Our medical students are used to it, so yeah, they probably would. Mm-hmm. That didn't help at all, turns out. You can reflect all you want to. Still, you're not going to do better on the next simulation if you're in the rudeness group. Because you did that. So apparently what we need to do is to get used to looking at angry faces and still doing our jobs.
I still think there's an out-of-the-box method that we can apply to that, right?
Would you like to explain that ideation?
Oh, no.
Okay.
I'm going to let you close us out.
We can't explain our ideation either, so why not take a break, and why don't you think about our ideation and come back for our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello, and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Mariah Carey Moment Show. Our salute to Mariah Carey.
I tell you what, you really pushed the envelope with that topic today.
I think you are world class,
Tony.
Thank you.
I can't say that
as
enough.
A part of a leading radio show. I think that's the sort of thing we have to do here.
I just can't say that enough. A world class,
Shelley.
Best in breed.
Really? Okay.
You know, Tony, this would have been. You know, we really need to switch.
All right, so we're gonna switch now. I'm gonna give mine to Shelley. Pass it down to Rick. Take Rick's.
I want a good one. Did I get the number one ones? I didn't get the number one ones.
No, I've at the end of the day, I've got the number one. At least
I don't feel empowered.
Okay.
All right, so we're all.
We're off and running again. Our sponsor for the final time, Thyroid Awareness Month.
I did get the low-hanging fruit, though.
Okay, January is Thyroid Awareness Month. Here's what you need to know for that. Reminding you, be aware of your thyroid. Be very aware. Let's go over these top 10 thyroid fun facts from the American Thyroid Association. Number one, no matter what Rick says, the thyroid gland is, in fact, a butterfly-shaped gland.
Hey, you said it right.
in front of the lower front of the neck. Again, the body of the butterfly sits over your windpipe. The wings go off to the side. This thing also, one of the ways we examine it, it moves up and down when you swallow. So if you put your fingers at the very base of your neck and you swallow, you can feel the thyroid move up and down. But it's not that impressive. It's not something that will knock your fingers off your neck when you swallow. The thyroid's job is to make thyroid hormones secreted in the blood, carried to every tissue of the body. It helps. It sets the body's thermostat. Helps you with your metabolism. Helps you stay warm. Sets your heart rate. Sets your blood pressure. Keeps the heart, the brain, the muscles, and other organs working properly. It regulates the body's metabolism. Fun fact number two: more than 12% of the U.S. population will develop a thyroid condition during their lifetime. Fun fact number three: up to 60% of those who develop a condition will be unaware of it. The symptoms are quite subtle and they come on gradually. Fun fact number four: women 5 to 8 times more likely than men to have a thyroid problem. In fact, according to the American Thyroid Association, 1 woman in 8, which as best we can tell comes down to 12% again, will develop a thyroid disorder during their lifetime. Fun fact number five: hypothyroidism is a condition where the thyroid gland does not make enough thyroid hormone. This is an easy one to treat. We measure the thyroid hormone level. We find that it is low. We give you thyroid hormone supplements. One of the brand names, the most common brand name, is something called Synthroid. And your fatigue, depression, forgetfulness, weight gain goes away, and you feel like a new person, and you will thank your doctor for that. Fun fact number six: if you are pregnant and you have hypothyroidism, that can cause some serious problems for the baby and increase your risk of miscarriage. That is one of the things we test during pregnancy. Fun fact number seven: hyperthyroidism is when the gland makes too much hormone. Irritability, nervousness, muscle weakness, unexplained weight loss, sleep disturbances, vision problems, and eye irritation. And in fact, fun fact number eight: Graves' disease is a particular type of hyperthyroidism. A protein is deposited which pushes the eyeballs out and makes a person appear bug-eyed. That is Graves' disease. Fun fact number nine: most thyroid cancers respond to treatment, though a small percentage can be aggressive. And fun fact number 10: thyroid diseases are lifelong conditions that require medical monitoring and treatment. So that is the thyroid awareness fun facts from the American Thyroid Association. Okay, we are in the home stretch now. And by the way, home stretch was not one of the words. I mean, it was.
Hey, Tony, what? Leave the color to me.
Okay. Rick is going to be on the bleeding edge of using these over words. If we get buy-in from the audience on this at the end of the day, that will be that's the ballpark what we're trying to do.
The fact is years ago, you empowered me to do color.
Shelley?
He's pushing the envelope.
At what point will the listeners push the radio dial?
Yeah, I know, but I just feel like Shelley's just not quite fully invested in and being obnoxious. It seems to come harder to her than it does to either me or Rick.
I didn't even notice it.
We are on to Cancer Statistics 2017, the American Cancer Society's annual report on cancer, the incidence, the mortality, the survival. All the numbers you need to know. And the interesting thing, they look back, and this report came out with the headline, Cancer Death Rate Has Dropped 25% Since a 1991 Peak. It's absolutely fascinating, Rick, because, you know, cancer is poised in the United States to become the leading cause of death. The death rate has dropped. We are getting older. Therefore, if there are more older people, and cancer is a disease of older people, there will, in fact, be more cancers. Even if the rate drops, if you have more people to have that rate, you will, in fact, have more cases. But 25% drop, 2.1 million fewer cancer deaths than would have been expected between 1991 and 2014. In 2017, there's going to be 1,600,000 new cases and over 500,000 cancer deaths in the U.S. Overall incidence rate stable in women, dropping in men. There's a couple of reasons why it drops, as you might imagine. One is, and this is the number one reason, absolutely, steady reduction in smoking. Lung cancer, a common cancer, a deadly cancer, the leading by far, almost twice as much as any other form of cancer, the leading cause of cancer death. And unfortunately, Kentucky has not enjoyed the kind of drops that have occurred in the rest of the nation because we will not do the things that we need to do to drop our smoking rates. Also, advances in early cancer detection and treatment. Now, one point I want to make, we talked a lot about the cancer moonshot. The cancer moonshot really did not talk about prevention and early detection, which is where we have gotten our 25% advantage. It is more about sharing information, building large databases, new drugs and new treatments, but it is not about prevention. And for many people, that is one of the leading problems with the cancer moonshot as developed by Joe Biden and others. Decreasing rates, four major cancer sites. Lung cancer death rates dropped 43% among males and 17% among females. Breast cancer rates dropped, death rates dropped 38%. Prostate cancer rates, death rates dropped in half, mm-hmm. as did colorectal cancer. For all sites combined, cancer incidence rate 20% higher in men than women. Cancer death rate 40% higher in men. That is, men die of cancer, which is fascinating because you tend to think men won't live long enough to get cancer. But in fact, they die of cancer much 40% higher death rates than women.
I don't know.
Just flawed genetics. I mean, there's just something not happening there.
It could be occupational.
Good point. They mentioned a couple of things. Liver cancer, three times more common in men than women because, unfortunately, we like to do IV drugs and get hepatitis C. We also smoke more than women. We also drink more than women do. One thing, here's an interesting, this one, I actually highlighted this because I wanted to make sure I brought this up. Melanoma incidence rates are 60% higher in men than in women. Melanoma death rates are double in men compared with women. Now, you have heard the narrative that tanning beds are driving melanoma. And yet, men's melanoma rates, 60% higher incidence, double the death rate from women.
Yeah, but while going to the tanning bed is not advised, being a man sometimes requires you to be just do dumb stuff like, you know, not put on suntan lotion.
So you're
right? I mean, so I spent my entire life in the sun without any lotion.
But I'm going to maintain that women still tan more than men, whether it's natural or it's tanning bed. If tanning is the cause of melanoma.
Do you think women are outside more than men?
Oh, you got, I don't think so.
You think so? You're really out of the box on that one. You're really a thought leader on that one, Erica.
Okay. Fair, you got me there. So,
no, it was a question. I really didn't, you know.
No, I think you're right. And we think that melanoma is related to the number of sunburns. We've talked about the geographic distribution. It makes no sense at all where Maine and Vermont have higher melanoma incidence rates than Florida.
Right.
So it's not necessarily about sun exposure. And I will say, despite all the anti-tanning bed stuff, and I'm certainly not pro-tanning bed. I don't think it's a good idea.
Why do you have one in your house? Just kidding.
Because, hang on a second, because I'm at the end of the day, I'm in the ballpark.
That was world class.
You couldn't find low-hanging fruit there.
No, I'm not a pro tanning bed guy, but honestly, I think the problem is you think, well, if I don't use a tanning bed, then I don't get melanoma. I mean, we've gotten it to the point
absolutely
where
not true.
That is absolutely not true. And again, although you think of melanoma as those women who pursue a very dark tan are at high risk, and they are at increased risk, but from a population standpoint, it's the men that get it, and it's the men that die from it. And in that case, it may be being outdoors, and it may be getting early sunburns as teenagers. And certainly, I had my share.
Some last year. I don't want to hear about it.
Okay.
Didn't, right? I mean, I guarantee you didn't use sunscreen last year.
Well, you know where I got sunburns as an adult is I would my daughter would have a soccer game in the middle of the afternoon.
Right.
And I would get a sunburn from that. Left to my own devices. If I'm out, I no longer work.
Well, you hang out in the woods. You don't go where
that's
the
true.
Sun.
I go to a shady place, and I found that I no longer work in a long enough stretch to get a sunburn. I'm going to be exhausted. I'm going to be inside taking a nap before my skin even starts to turn red. This is one of the advantages of old age. It's very hard to get a sunburn.
It is, and it makes the longing for ice cream even better. The two best advantages.
You get the ice cream, you feel like, hey, I probably deserve it, which I don't, but still, I can feel that way. I think, though, you know, the fact that the cancer rates, the incidence rates are dropping is going to help us out. Fascinating that as the baby boomer generation ages, we're going to have more problems with cancer. We're also going to have more problems with Alzheimer's disease, and yet the rates of both conditions are dropping. Does not mean that the number of cases will drop because there are so many of us that are getting older. But thank goodness. I mean, if they had kept it the same rate of cancer, same rate of Alzheimer's disease, we would have overwhelmed the healthcare system even more than we are. So there is some good news there, although the melanoma rates, I think, are not good.
If you say so.
All right. I gave you a chance to look at your sheet.
I'm going to leave the color to you.
That was a good example of negative growth.
Okay.
Why'd you empower her? Why did you empower her?
You have to use it logically. You can't just fling the words out. I mean, what do you mean negative growth? That doesn't make any sense at all.
Let's be honest, negative growth is dumb anyway.
Fewer cancer cases is negative growth of cancer. Okay. Excuse me, I misunderstood. And speaking of negative growth,
I'm glad we could get that methodology explained to you.
Okay. This was January 9th, 2017. I picked it up off New Scientist, but there were several outlets who reported this. And this is the United Kingdom. So you've got to recognize this is not U.S. Medical news, but something that we may see some variation on this. There was what they termed a massive drop in HIV rates in London. The sexually transmitted disease clinics recorded a 40% drop in the number of new HIV infections in 2016 compared with 2015. And what they think happened, it doesn't appear that there were a change in sexual morality. There was nothing except people were buying something called pre-exposure prophylaxis. That is, if you get a needle stick, that's called post-exposure prophylaxis. But you can buy drugs that drop the rate of transmission of HIV/AIDS, and it's called pre-exposure prophylaxis. We know it works, but in the United Kingdom, they were trying to figure out whether they could afford to pay for it or not. What happened was a group of HIV activists convinced much of the gay community in London to order these medicines from other countries. They said, look, the United Kingdom right now, the National Health Service is trying to figure out whether they will pay for them or not. You should get these. They bought generic Truvada, which is the brand name drug. They brought a generic version of that from online pharmacies in India and Swaziland. It would cost £400 a month for Truvada in the United Kingdom. It costs £40 a month in India and Swaziland.
Wow. Did you want some color now?
Well, the point
is, I never
is,
like talking about drugs.
You know, right now, I know, but we are facing a hepatitis C epidemic in rural Kentucky. And we are one infected patient away because we use so much IV drugs here in Kentucky, one patient away from having an HIV epidemic. And the thing is, the hepatitis C drugs are just phenomenally expensive in the U.S. Now, if a similar movement occurred, the problem is the gay community is much better organized than IV drug abusers. So I don't think that there's going to be this big movement to start ordering these drugs from abroad. But if, in fact, we cannot provide people with the treatment for either hepatitis C or HIV for a reasonable cost, or other conditions for that matter, we may see more and more internet ordering of drugs. And I think right now the U.S. is primed. If we don't do something about drug prices, I think we're going to see this for a number of conditions. And if the cost drops again, but if you imagine, if you could get your drugs for one-tenth the previous cost, I think that would increase people's ability to take a lot of medications. So I wanted people to be aware of it. It appears that if you make the medications cheap, and in the case of HIV, if you provide that pre-exposure prophylaxis, that does seem to have a huge, huge impact on your transmission rates. And we will need something, some miracle along that order, in order to protect our people from HIV. What they do is they cut down their rate of transmission. You don't shed as much virus. Right now, our policy in the state of Kentucky is to wait until you are extremely sick, you have liver damage from hepatitis C, before we even treat you. Mm-hmm. That means while you're healthy, you are infecting other people.
Great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And once you get too sick to infect other people, then we'll try to save your life with these drugs. That's not a very good policy. It'd be better to, if we can get them. I don't know what the cost of hepatitis C drugs is in Swaziland or India, but I'm betting it's not $84,000.
Probably not.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty well. I mean, Rick didn't even have a clever phrase.
You tired me out, man. All those words.
I know.
21 things, just it's too much.
Too much to keep track of.
You were too far outside the box.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know. I'm done. Checkmate.
All right. Final thing here, I've got just reminding people. These are guidelines on preventing peanut allergy from the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology that was released on January 6th. Infants with severe eczema, egg allergy, or both should have peanut-containing foods introduced as early as 4 to 6 months. That is, if you have evidence of previous allergy, you need to get the peanut butter going so the child will not get a peanut allergy. For infants with only mild to moderate eczema, peanut introduction can occur around 6 months. Those without eczema or any food allergy should eat solid foods containing peanuts in accordance with family preferences and cultural practices.
I saw that on the nightly news the other night.
Well, this peanut allergy has been a possible death for so many kids. I understand why they're trying to now to change the environment here. We found this out. We had the wrong approach. We were trying to avoid them. That made things worse. What we need to do is to try to get them early while the immune system is developing so the immune system can become used to it.
Sounds like solid methodology to me, Tony.
Can you?
Can you? Are you empowering me?
We are at the end of the show. At the end of the day, can you ballpark us off the air, Rick?
Oh my gosh! Yes, I can.
Thank you.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer Brian Courtney and to Eric Bilber, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to our show, go to WMKY.org or just visit us on Facebook. Do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
Health Matters is a health radio show for adult males who have low or no testosterone.
It is not known if Health Matters is safe or effective in children younger than 18 years old. Radio shows that are applied to the skin may have different doses, strengths, or application instructions that may lead to different levels of testosterone in your body.
Health Matters can transfer from your body to others. This can happen if other people come into contact with the area where Health Matters was heard.
Unexpected signs of puberty have happened in young children who were accidentally exposed to radio shows through skin-to-skin contact with men using health radio products like Health Matters.
Women and children should avoid contact with the unwashed or unclothed area where Health Matters has been heard. If a woman or child makes contact with the Health Matters application area, the contact area on the woman or child should be washed well with soap and water right away.
Why don't you wash your ears out with soap and water? Do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week. Make a healthy change in your life. And tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medicine on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.